That was just a little bit of the first movement of Symphony No. 4 by composer Christopher Rouse. It was from the world premiere performance of that piece by the New York Philharmonic. It took place in Avery Fisher Hall with Alan Gilbert conducting. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. This is the second in a two-part series featuring the inaugural New York Philharmonic Biennial. This was 21 concerts over 11 days, all contemporary music. There were operas, chamber pieces, concertos, solos. It took place in Avery Fisher, Jazz at Lincoln Center, all over Manhattan. It was really an incredible event, and I had the wonderful opportunity to be there in New York and to attend almost all of the concerts, just some marathon concert going over those 11 days. It was really, really incredible. We're going to come back to that piece, the world premiere of Symphony No. 4 by Christopher Rouse, who is the composer in residence with the New York Philharmonic. Let's go from Avery Fisher Hall to a downtown venue called Subculture. This is a relatively new music venue that is specializing in contemporary and experimental music. This was a series of solo pieces that were premiered by New York Philharmonic musicians. Many of them were commissioned by the orchestra also. We're going to hear two movements from Of Sorrow Born, Seven Elegies by composer Michael Hirsch. This is for the solo violin. We're going to hear Yulia Ziskel performing movements 1 and 2. Of Sorrow Born, Seven Elegies by composer Michael Hirsch. Thank you. Music from a live performance at Subculture, and that was a concert of solos. The solo in question that we just heard was for violin. That was Yulia Ziskel performing two movements from Of Sorrow Born, Seven Elegies by Michael Hirsch. That night at Subculture, it was all solos for different instruments from the orchestra. Many of the pieces had been commissioned by the New York Philharmonic. All of them were receiving at least a New York premiere, and some of them were getting their world premiere that very evening. So it was a really magical evening. All seven of the composers were there to talk about their pieces, and they were all performed with great flair and commitment. Let's turn to what was another magical evening in the biennial, and that was a concert in the Gund Lobby at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art. Again, they had the musicians there quite late at night, 10 o'clock at night. They had lit them up. They were in front of the sculpture garden, which was also lit up. Just a beautiful, beautiful scene, and the music, I thought, was absolutely incredible. These were a series of pieces that had originally been commissioned by conductor and composer Matthias Pinscher, inspired by sculptures that had been unveiled over the past several years in Salzburg and first performed in 2013 in Salzburg. And now they brought nine of these pieces to MoMA. Let's feature a piece by Bruno Mantovani. This is called Spirit of Alberti. It is inspired by a statue, of course, in Salzburg called the Spirit of Mozart. And the statue, the sculpture, what it is a giant chair. I mean, a really, really very tall stainless steel chair that's surrounded by eight other chairs. Let's have a listen. Spirit of Alberti by Bruno Mantovani. These are musicians from the New York Philharmonic with Matthias Pinscher conducting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Music inspired by a sculpture in Salzburg that is called Spirit of Mozart. It consists of a gigantic stainless steel chair around which are arrayed eight other smaller chairs. And I love what the sculptor has to say. She actually has an invitation for people walking by the sculpture. She says, "Sit down on the chair, close your eyes, look inside, lose track of time." I love that idea that in a busy city like Salzburg, you could sit down in this chair, which is also art, which is also a sculpture, and lose yourself. The piece of music is called Spirit of Alberti, and it makes sense to me that the composer would write a piece called Spirit of Alberti after a sculpture called Spirit of Mozart. Alberti was a composer a little before Mozart who invented what's become known as the Alberti bass, which is a very popular rhythmic bass pattern that propels the piece along very nicely, and Mozart uses it quite a bit in his pieces. And for those of us music geeks, the composer uses it in the piece Spirit of Alberti in the middle and a little bit there at the end. You can hear that Alberti bass pattern. That's music of Bruno Mantovani, again, Spirit of Alberti, inspired by a sculpture in Salzburg. We heard musicians from the New York Philharmonic with Matthias Pinscher conducting, part of the New York Philharmonic's inaugural biennial. Let's head back downtown for that concert of solos at Subculture. I thought this was a very interesting piece for cello by Paola Prestini. Not only was it a great piece, but the story behind the piece was great too. As I said, each of the composers did introduce their music, and she said that the piece was inspired by a poetic story by Brenda Shaughnessy, who happened to be there that night, and she read an excerpt. So let's have a listen. This is Brenda Shaughnessy reading from her One Love Story, Eight Takes, and we'll go right into the piece, Eight Takes, by Paola Prestini, Sumire Kudo. Cello.
One Love Story, Eight Takes. One version of the story is I wish you back, that I used each evening, evening out, what all day spent wrinkling. I bought a dress that was so extravagantly feminine you could see my ovaries through it. This is how I thought I would seduce you. This is how frantic I hollowed out. The story exists even when there are no witnesses, kissers, tellers, because secrets secrete. And these versions tend to be slapstick, as if in a candy factory the chocolate belted down the conveyor too fast, or everyone turns sideways at the same time by accident. This little tale tries so hard to be humorous, wants so badly to win affection and to lodge, because nothing is truly forgotten and loved. As it turns out, there is a wrong way to tell this story. I was wrong to tell you how multi-true everything is, when it would be much truer to say nothing. I've invented so much and prevented more. But I'd like to talk with you about other things, in absolute quiet, in extreme context, to see you again. Isn't love revision? It could have gone so many ways. This is just one of the ways it went. Tell me another.
That's a wonderful piece called Eight Takes by composer Paola Prestini. It's for solo cello, and we heard the New York Philharmonic cellist Sumire Kudo giving the world premiere of that piece at Subculture, part of the New York Philharmonic's biennial. The composers were all present for that concert, so Paola beforehand mentioned that the piece was inspired by a poetic story by Brenda Shaughnessy called One Love Story, Eight Takes, and we heard her reading a little bit before we heard the piece, which I think really makes the piece make a lot of sense when you hear the text that inspired it. You're listening to Relevant Tones, a show featuring the music of contemporary composers. This is part two of a two-part series on the New York Philharmonic's inaugural biennial, 21 concerts of contemporary music over 11 days. You can find out more information about the program on our Facebook page or at relevanttones.com. Well, the next piece was so significant. It was the world premiere by a major composer. He's the composer in residence at the New York Philharmonic. Not just a world premiere, but a world premiere of his symphony, Symphony No. 4. And so we're going to devote the entire second half of the program to this piece. I had a great opportunity to talk with Christopher Rouse about his fourth symphony and kind of about music in general. So I'm going to take you to that conversation, which took place at Lincoln Center in the audio production booth at the New York Philharmonic.
The fourth symphony... Well, I imagine people will find it very enigmatic. It's in two movements, a fast movement and a slow movement. And the fast movement is very, I suppose, celebratory, and the slow movement is not.
Is there any kind of programmatic theme? Oftentimes there's a mythological theme in your work about a person. Is there anything like that in Symphony No. 4?
No.
Pure music?
Well, is there such a thing really as pure music outside of Czerny exercises or something like that? I think all music is programmatic in the sense that it's meant to elicit emotional responses through music that is descriptive of emotional states. It may not have to be narrative programmatic, like the Symphony Fantastique or a Strauss tone poem, but the Beethoven Fifth is very much about moods, about states of mind. So is a Bach fugue.
That's a conversation I had with composer Christopher Rouse in the New York Philharmonic's audio production room a couple of days before the premiere of Symphony No. 4. He was talking about that music, and I also found these program notes that he wrote about Symphony No. 4. I just want to read one sentence because I think it really underscores what he's saying. He says, "But I do fervently believe that there is a lingua franca of musical expression, one that most composers have understood over the years and have employed to convey specific emotional states." I think that's really what he's getting at here in Symphony No. 4. Let's have a listen. This is the world premiere of Symphony No. 4 by Christopher Rouse. We're going to hear the New York Philharmonic and Avery Fisher Hall, Alan Gilbert conducting.
Thank you.
I was at that concert, the world premiere of Symphony No. 4 by Christopher Rouse, and at the end of that second movement, everybody was on tenterhooks. I swear we were on the edge of our seats. It was just an incredible feel in the air as that music hung and hung there. The world premiere of Symphony No. 4 by Christopher Rouse, that was the New York Philharmonic, Alan Gilbert conducting. This is the second in a two-part series about the inaugural New York Philharmonic Biennial. The Biennial was 21 concerts of contemporary music, a snapshot, really, of what's going on in classical music right now, all happening over 11 days. They called it the musical playground of the here and now. I had a wonderful opportunity to be there. I went to almost every concert, and I found it to be just a joyous, incredible celebration of contemporary classical music, all the wonderful things that are happening in our art form around the world. And they're already planning the 2016 Biennial. I think that'll be really incredible. How much will our art form have changed in 2 years? What will be happening 2 years from now? Who will be composers we might not even have heard of yet, but that will be on the Biennial? So I don't know about you, but I'm quite excited for the New York Philharmonic's Biennial in 2016. Relevant Tones is produced by Jesse McQuarters, with special thanks to Claire Fasnacht. For more information about the program and the artists we've featured, you can find us on Facebook, and you can hear this and all previous programs at relevanttones.com. Relevant Tones is brought to you in part by the generous support of Grosvenor Capital Management LP, the Aaron Copland Fund for Music, and the listener supporters of the WFMT Fine Arts Circle. This project is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, Artworks. I'm Seth Bosted, and this is the WFMT Radio Network.